This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. Thanks so much for tuning in today. It's a holiday week, so we're going to get into the numbers of June. We're also going to do the Best Of Show. Wow, I cannot believe that we are already in the first week of July. Pretty amazing stuff. Okay, so today, here's the agenda for the day. So I want to go over, I want to tell a little story. I'm going to talk about a TMS equivalent of anxiety. And then we're going to go over some of the June results, actually all of the June results. And then we're going to get into some of my favorite clips. I went through and I looked at the first dozen or so episodes, the 2017 episodes, and I cut up some of my favorite pieces. So we'll get into that. So initially, I want to tell a story. Okay, so last week, I don't know what brought it on, but I just started to have, you know, there's a lot of equivalents of TMS. There's the back pain, there's the neck pain, there's the stomach pain, there's the wrist pain, elbow pain, foot pain, knee pain, whatever. But there's also anxiety and there's also depression. And one of the things I was thinking about recently, if you think about fight or flight or freeze, which are the three different responses that that primitive part of our brain has when it's amped up and when it's turned on, the amygdala. So the way that I like to think about it is, so fight is almost like the physical pain. This is how I see it, but fight is the physical pain, right? That's the manifestation, the back pain, the neck pain, you're tightening up. That's what it is. Flight, in a lot of ways, I see as anxiety. When you think about being really, really anxious, you get all worked up. I got to get out of this situation. I got to get this out of this situation. That's what I see as flight. Freeze response, I see very much as depression. You're sort of stuck. You don't really know what to do, and that's kind of how I see depression. So it was Friday of last week, and I suddenly just started to get very, very anxious. I was sort of having this back and forth of back pain and anxiety and back pain and feeling anxious and all this kind of stuff. And then Saturday hit, and I just sort of hit a wall. It was very, very strange. I had a really, really bad lifting day, and then I went to the beach. Something was just bugging me. I didn't know what it was, and I still don't know exactly what it is. But for the first time in forever, the whole idea of this stuff is being able to really feel your feelings, and the why behind the issue is not necessarily the important part. It's more feeling your feelings. If you're sad, be sad. If you're happy, be happy. If you're angry, be angry. And I just pulled up to the side of the beach, and I just cried like a baby. It was it was wild. I haven't had anything like that ever happen before, especially when I didn't know the cause, and I didn't want to dig into whatever the why, right? Because the why isn't necessarily important. I posted this on my Facebook page. It got a ton of support. So anybody that's listening to this that read about that, I thank you. And the good thing was is that the back pain and anxiety just they went away as soon as I wrapped up my cry session. I think part of it is that was actually 1 year to the day of really like finding Sarno and really turning my life around. I'm sure there's some kind of conditioning there. You know, my daughter turned four, or she's turning four this week. Actually, as I record this, is her fourth birthday. So, you know, life is just heavy, right? That's what it is. But I think the ability to stop and really sort of process those things is such a powerful tool. So anyway, as we get into the June results, so May, if you recall the first episode in June, I talked about May results and May was awesome. 677 downloads and, 75% of my audience at the time was male. Many of them were younger in the younger demographic. June had way better results. So I had 677 downloads in May. There was 982. That's like a 40% uptick for the month of June. The top episodes were Christy Weepy and then Trevor Russell and then Thank You, Dr. Sarno, and then Positive versus Negative Emotions. And it was in that order. So really pretty amazing. And then the number five downloaded episode of the entire month was my interview with Steve Ozanich from 6 months ago. Still getting a ton of downloads. Nicole Sachs came in at seventh. Caitlin Michaels came in at eighth. So old episodes are still getting a lot of attention, which I like to see. As I scroll through the analytics, the hosting service that I use for the podcast gives me some great analytics. So 88% of the episodes in May were downloaded in the United States, the 12% coming from outside the United States. Global reach is awesome. And even with far more downloads happening, the number of downloads in the U.S. actually went down by 0.5%. 87.5% were downloaded in the U.S. and the rest were done outside of the U.S. So I think that that's pretty cool. Since I was accepted onto Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Google Play all in the month of June, the downloads got a little bit more evenly distributed, but still 70% of all downloads came from Apple devices, which is, you know, doesn't really surprise me with the market share that they have. And then a couple of the more interesting statistics is that if I look at the who's listening, so 45% of downloads came from people 25 to 34, so in that demographic. Another 20% came in the 35 to 44 demographic. 25% came 45 to 54-year-old demographic, which is a much bigger chunk than I would have thought. In about 12 or 13% came in that 55 to 64-year-old demographic. The most compelling stat I see is that last month it was 75. So in May it was 75% male and 25% female. In June it was 52% male and 48% female. So the female listeners really went up a lot, and I'm not sure exactly what to attribute that to. I know I was talking to a friend of mine, and she actually said that Christy Weepy was so engaging, and it being a female. That was huge for the show. So thank you, Christy, if you're listening to this. You got some rave reviews from a lot of people. So that was awesome. So my dog is banging at the door. He wants to come and hang out. So let's bring him in. Of course you can't see him, but he's a cute little black pug. He's a 9-year-old black pug. Okay, so for today, I'm just going to essentially play them. I'll have a divider. You'll hear the sound from the theme song just to break up the actual clips. But this is going to be about 45 minutes worth of the best of clips. So I've got a clip from the Tia Wright episode. I've got a clip from the Eric Gouge episode. He's a Marine. We talked a little bit about like PTSD and headaches and such. And you can probably hear my dog breathing in the background. That's what pugs do on warm days. A really good clip from the Rachel Novak episode. A really good clip from the Lilia Christine episode. Taylor Gage from She Thrives blog joined me back nine months ago or so. And there's a clip in there. And then Nicole Sachs, there's a great clip in there. And then two clips from the Steve Ozanich episode. So again, I'll put a little divider in there, but these are going to be worth your time. And I would say if you really like the 2 to 7 minute clips that I put in there from these, I encourage you to go back and actually just listen to the whole episode. We talk about a lot of different things, but these clips were among some of my favorites. So have a great holiday week, and we'll be back with a new interview next week.
I don't know. Anyway, so I got introduced to this chiropractor who did CrossFit. And when I went in to see him, I wasn't even really like needing anything specifically, but I had this little nagging back pain, not a back injury. I could tell it was fine. Yep. I was a full on CrossFitter still did the hour today, never skilled anything back. But every time I back squatted, I just had this little nagging pain.
Yeah.
And I just like couldn't even handle
this
it.
This is low back?
Yeah. Like I knew it wasn't an injury. I knew there was nothing wrong with me. I knew that I didn't herniate a disc. I knew that an adjustment wasn't fixing it because I could pop my own back. I knew that like, and it only hurt at certain times, you know?
Yep.
And I was like, there's gotta be truth to this. Like, I'm not going to go get an MRI. I'm not going to go get an x-ray because that's a waste of my money. But, and I knew there wasn't tissue damage, but I knew there was something wrong because it hurt.
Yep.
And so I found this chiropractor and he was working on me and he was like, hey, can we do something that's more on the emotional side of things? And, long story short, we went through this crazy emotional thing where I had moved away for college and I thought that, you know, my best friend had also moved away and I was sad that she was gone. And I was gone from my dad and I missed my dad and there was all this stuff. And sure enough, the day I left his office, my back never hurt again.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Like, I think it's all in my head. And so kind of from that point on, I just took an entirely different perspective on pain in the body.
And so we talked a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago now about, there was something that you said that was along the lines of your lat was feeling like extra stiff.
Oh yeah.
And it was almost like you're at a point now where you can almost like pinpoint body part X means problem Y.
Sometimes it's in different areas, but this one for sure was, I'm ready for this season to be over. Yeah. Because it started right before regionals, and I actually don't know, actually I do know, but I had am not willing to share that. And then it kind of continued, and I knew that once regionals ended, it got worse, but my shoulder, I kid you not, stopped hurting when the games ended.
Yep.
Like, it just stopped, and I was fine.
You're saying the games that happened in August, not the regionals.
Yes. Okay. Games.
Yeah. Because you're probably sitting there festering over why the fuck aren't I there?
Absolutely. Yeah. And like the team was there and there were all these emotions and Chrissy was injured and I really wanted her to be there and my other best friend made it on the team and I wasn't going and there was so much going on. It was very emotional and yeah. I just sat back and knew that lat would stop feeling like it's going to rip off my body.
Yep.
Come right when the games settle.
Yeah.
So 2 weeks later after the games, like, gone.
You know, it's no pain. So my I'm 31, you're 25, and my therapist, the last time I saw him, gave me a big A+ for basically saying very similar to what you just said, that when stressful situations sort of leave, like the games ends, the injury goes away. And I know now that that's a connection, right? Like, you know, that went away because essentially this, you know, the stressful moment's over. Like, what is there to fester about? And that you're now cognizant that that's
but
the
you
issue.
Can fester it and it can stay.
It definitely can stay.
Like, if I had been all caught up about it and not let my body kind of process that, mm-hmm. and not let it go through what it needed to go through, maybe it was holding back so I recovered. I don't know. You know, there are probably specific emotions related there. But I was willing to just let my body go through what it needed to go through and be proud of them for going to the games and to go through that whole experience with them and watch them train and travel and be supportive of that. And I was willing to let my body heal and go through that.
Yeah.
Had I stressed out about it and gone neurotic and talked about it to people and, you know, just kind of festered, I bet I would have actually injured my lat. Like, I bet I would have an actual lat tear.
Interesting. You know, the science behind that, what you're speaking about is that the whole idea is that, like, your brain processes emotions in a certain way, and that connection, the central nervous system connecting to the autonomic nervous system, which is where your blood flows and how you breathe, and the things essentially that happen that you've got really no control over. Like, you can't tell your heart stop beating. Mm-hmm.
Oh, but the mind is so much more powerful than we think.
Way more powerful than we think. And essentially what's probably going on in the lat is, like, the emotions are sort of, they're sending this oxygen deprivation via the autonomic nervous system into that lat. So, like, you have less blood flow, which probably is why you say it could have resulted in a lat tear.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of science behind it. I don't know exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And I'm not one to need the science. Yeah. Like, I'm not like that. Like, if it works, it works. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But for me, I think it's simple that there was stress on my system and that stress resulted in some sort of weak tissue, mm-hmm. or, you know, like some people, get asthma.
Yep.
And some people have allergies. Some people have whatever, it's food sensitivities. And some people get stressed and their joints hurt. Like, your body is a system, and the minute something invades that system, like, it's going to crack in some point. And for me, that's just where it went that time.
Do you feel like that when you share that theory with other people?
Oh, people hate that.
Right.
No, it can't be possible. Yeah, like, that's ridiculous. Like, this is all hocus pocus.
Which is really backwards to me, too. Because you, like, people can accept the fact, say that you had a friend that was getting ready to give a speech and you shook their hand before they went out and their hand was all sweaty or clammy. They would probably say, sorry, my hand's all sweaty. I'm nervous before I go out. It's the exact same thing. Yeah. Your emotions have done something.
Absolutely.
That's affecting them. Like, people can accept that. So the doctor that really...
Here's a better example. A grad student in grad school, very aware of how school is affecting their body and how tired they are, or even how it's affecting their training. And, you know, like, little things come up like, oh, my knee hurts today, or, oh, my shoulder just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And they're not willing to realize or completely condone the fact that their body just simply hurts because of the stress that grad school is doing on their body.
Yep.
they think that like there's something wrong. Like, it's okay, relax. Like, your body's just going through a lot right now. Like, give it a break, you know? Things that do that people don't realize, like if your kid falls down at school, like if your kid gets in trouble, if you're moving, if you introduce a new food and you do it a lot and your body doesn't like it, there are so many things that can influence your system, and people just don't, they don't have the same like understanding of that concept. For me, it was just a different schedule.
Yep.
I worked the same amount of hours, but I didn't get my routine and I didn't have like the same setup to be successful. Yeah. And that enough was to make my joints hurt. Like, it was, you know, it's so, yes, people don't understand that concept, or maybe they do understand the concept. They just don't see it as big of a picture as I do.
I guess, you know, take me to, you get out of the military, and even since the military, has there been any instances with you and PTSD when it comes to the Marine Corps or being overseas or any of that stuff?
You know, I think it's different for everyone. I never, from my personal opinion, I mean, my wife might say something different, you know, but I feel like it hasn't affected me a ton, right, being overseas. It was just... you know, I look at it as an experience. I enjoyed a lot of it. You know, mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. I, you know, there's like, I almost went to a Humvee that got blown up and I ended up being the one behind it.
Yep.
Everyone survived. You know, my friend blew out his eardrums. But you know, it's kind of fucks you up in the head watching that stuff mm-hmm. happen, you know? And I mean, I go over to my friend's house and we have, you know, he has his iMac or his Mac, whatever. I'm a PC guy, so I don't know the names besides my iPhone, right? Yeah. So his whatever, he's got streaming on his TV, right? And all of a sudden there's like, we're with all our wives and like our girlfriends and stuff at the time. And like a picture of a face comes up on the, and it's like a chunk of a face. Cause it like, we watched, like people got blown up in front of you, right? I mean, you've seen this like, this horrific stuff. And I think everyone, you know, handles it differently, mm-hmm. you know? Some people really cannot take it, you know, it just, it fucks with their head too much. They're not prepared for, they're not, you know, for whatever reason, it just, you know, doesn't work for them,
yeah.
you know, in their brain. I never had a ton of stuff. I drank really heavily when I was in my last, like when I got back from Iraq, I drank a fifth a night easily
of whiskey.
I mean, it was just like, and it was a party, right? We got back, we had been to war, you know, and it was just like party, 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 forget what you've been through and, you know, just have fun.
Yeah.
Right. And then I met my wife and I kind of stopped drinking, you know, I kind of just, I still drank, but not as much. And then I progressed. So I barely even drink at all anymore.
Yeah.
But you know, that's probably my hardest thing. And I was, you know, and I was angry, you know, and I think that was a part of just everything that happened. And you know, stuff that you saw, and you know, I've lost friends, which I think that's the hardest thing for me is the friends I've lost.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably what's fucked with me the most. You know, you meet these people, sorry, and they're just awesome people, and they die. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's one thing you're there with them 1 minute, and I never had friends that, you know, I never had any friends that died with me in battle.
Yeah.
You know. We were never fighting and someone died. But, you know, I've had friends that, you know, were on a deployment and you hear about it on the news or from another friend on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably what fucks you up the most.
Yeah.
It definitely takes a toll,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's just taxing on the brain. There's anything more than anything. And it just, you know, it's hard to overcome that stuff.
We talked a little bit a couple of months ago about, you know, you're talking about like, you're sort of thinking about these very stressful events. And I almost feel like we sort of dabbled into, you have these stressful times that you're thinking of and you get a headache or
yeah.
like, there's just certain, I guess like run me through a couple of examples on where there's been something, maybe a stomach problem or your neck hurt. Like,
yeah, I think, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, like, I know, like you've talked about in the past, you know, you tense up, you know, and it's that, and what happens for me is it's just like, I get angry sometimes, mm-hmm. and, you know, and I've tried to stop it. and I've worked on it throughout my life, the past years. And you just, you know, some things just set you off. Like the stupidest stuff sets me off, you know, like driving around and just people being idiots. Right. Mm-hmm. It just boils my blood, you know? And I'm no good. I'm not the best driver in the world, but you know, and I just tense up. And that's the basic thing. And then it's just, you just have that feeling like you're talking about, you know, it's where it's just, everything just is like tight on you and it yep. hurts. Right.
Yep.
I don't, you know, sometimes I'll get headaches and stuff like that. I've definitely noticed, and my wife kind of, it's been brought to a head this past couple of months that, especially now I have two kids, I have a newborn, you know, a 3-month-old mm-hmm. baby. And
how old's your oldest?
So my oldest is two years and 3 months. He was born the 4th of July. Wow. And then my daughter is 3 months, going to be 3 months on the 16th. So she's born on the 16th of July.
So you wasted no time.
No time. Yeah. So we got two years apart, you know, and my little guy, he's awesome, but just crazy, you yep. know? And, but I forget things, you know, I can't remember what I ate for lunch most of the time. Mm-hmm. Like just, and I don't know if that's from just, you know, from what,
yeah.
but I just have a hard time, you know, that's why now I live by my calendar and my notes on my phone. Cause I can't remember things.
Yep.
I mean, I can, you know, it's not important things. It's the stupid little things, yep. right? Like people ask you, you know, what were you drinking yesterday? I'm like, that's my answer now is I don't know what I had for lunch yesterday.
Right, right, right.
So, you know, I can remember everything else. I can have no problem doing other stuff. Everything important in my life I can remember. It's just like the stupid things you want to remember, you know? Like, yeah. you remember what you had for dinner the other night that was really good, you know? But it's like, I can't remember it.
It's a great message. As far as like, because again, like taking risks ultimately at some point, like, most of the time it will pay off. Sometimes it will not, and you'll encounter incredibly stressful events. Yep. And as you know, I'm a big, not just an admirer, but an obsessor with like this whole idea of like, you know, emotions play so heavy into issues that you may have physically, whether it's, right. you know, you have headaches or whether you have stomach problems or right. back pain, or, you know, whatever the case is. I guess like think about maybe a couple of times in your life where times have been extremely stressful. This could right. be anything. And a physical symptom has manifested itself to where you can think back now as a 31 and a half year old woman and say, yeah, I felt that way at the time physically, probably because of what was going on in my life.
Sure. You know, there were times, especially when we owned the restaurant company, mm-hmm. We owned it for almost 10 years. And, you know, there were times that I think the longest week that I ever clocked was 107 hours or 108 hours on the clock. It was just in 7 days. You know, it was just a bananas, just yeah. crazy. And
did you ask your boss for overtime pay?
You know what? That bastard did not give me overtime pay. but, you know, how it comes out for me is just that, how do I say it? Like an utter exhaustion, mm-hmm. like a to the bones exhaustion where, you know, I'll be running on a treadmill and all of a sudden I've got a squeaky knee, yeah. right? Or I've got knee pain or I've got, you know, joints was always kind of one for me. My shoulder, my wrist, right? I've kind of had issues throughout the years with these things and I'll see them flare up in times of a lot of stress,
yep.
right? And it's not, I'm not thinking about that and I'm not thinking about the actual stress that's in my life, but I'll have a little thing pop up and a little injury pop up and be like, oh, I hurt, you know,
what did I do to my shoulder?
Yeah, what did I do to my shoulder? Why is it screaming at me mm-hmm. when I'm trying to do a push press, whatever. Yeah. And then, you know, like you said, you kind of analyze your life and it's like, oh, I've got this and this and this that are stressing me to the max.
Yeah.
And, you know, that totally happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a big part of overcoming that is, okay, recognizing it, right? That, okay, an injury is here, but is it an injury or is it something deeper,
yep.
right? And realizing like you have, right? You've been through it recently. Realizing that if there's a bigger stressor happening, that needs to be dealt with.
Yeah.
And whether that's, you know, for me, that was me getting out of the restaurant industry. That mm-hmm. was me not managing our store anymore and getting into CrossFit coaching, which
yeah.
is what I really loved. And all of a sudden, I'm feeling great. I'm feeling yeah. healthy. I'm getting more fit, you know, and not just because it's in the fitness industry, but because I'm happy,
yep.
right? And the stresses of what I was dealing with in that particular job at the time were gone,
yeah.
right? So to speak, I dealt with them. I faced them, right? I took that risk to leave and to move into, you know, an area of life that made me happy and took
yeah.
away that stress level.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
People can be skeptics all day long, but here's the thing. If you're in pain and there was something that could make you feel better why wouldn't you want to try it out? Why not give yourself the opportunity to see, hey, maybe there's something to this, and release the stubbornness and actually look at, and this can get even bigger. I believe a lot of people do not feel that they are worthy of feeling good. They are in this story of being in pain for so long, and the physical aspect is oftentimes to them proof of, you know, how hard they worked or what they've gone through, and that they're deserving of this pain, and somehow it's glorified, right?
Yeah.
And they're not feeling good isn't good enough, because that means you're not working hard if you feel good. And so there's this whole emotional component as well, this mental side of like not actually wanting to get better, because there's some kind of badge of honor to having this injury and having this long-term pain. And I see that even, and you hear that word like playing the victim. I don't mean it in that way. This is a, you know, this can be a very subtle thing and that we all do in our own ways, but it's like, we are more comfortable with the pain because we know how to manage it. And we would almost rather, there's a book I recommend to everybody called The Untethered Soul. And it's a book really that talks about how we interact with our mind, and it's written very matter-of-factly. It's pretty awesome. But one of the sections they talk about is, you know, imagine if you had, I'm paraphrasing here, like a big thorn in your arm, a giant thorn in your arm, this pain, this big thorn. And so what you did is you adjusted your entire life around the fact that you have a thorn in your arm. And so maybe you make a little contraption so that when you sleep, you don't roll over and squish yourself on this thorn. Or when you're talking to people, you ensure that they stay back so that it doesn't dig in a little bit deeper. Because for you, it's more scary to address pulling that thorn out and going through the healing process of removing this piece of pain. And you get so attached to, like, you're the guy with a thorn in his arm.
Yep.
That you don't even remember what it could be like to not have that thorn there, on top of the fact that you are too scared to heal, to perhaps cause more pain to heal something. And the, like, because a lot of times when we dig into physical symptoms, there's a mental component that almost hurts more, right? Of, you know, looking at being hard on ourselves, or, you know, choosing lifestyle or behavior pieces that we need to change that are going to be really, really hard to change. There's a lot more pain that can come up that's more than just that physical pain you're experiencing. So we avoid it. We would rather live with the pain that we have than grant ourselves permission to expose what's deeper. And the reason we don't go deeper, because it might hurt. And we have a lot of examples in our life where digging into stuff hurts.
I'm so glad that you said that, the thorn in the arm thing. It's like, it's such a good analogy. I see a therapist every week. This is a mental therapist, not a physical therapist. And then the naturopathic doctor she uses this, I think it's called NET, neuro-emotional technique, is like, mm-hmm. part of where she does like manual muscle testing. But while she's doing this, she's asking typical trigger questions. Tell me about your, if I made this statement about your wife, if I said this about your kid, and it's really like when your muscles go weak, she knows that maybe that's something that should be exploited. And I saw my therapist on a Wednesday, and then I saw this NET naturopath on Friday, and they both found triggers, the same trigger. And I never brought it up to the naturopath. Like, I never, you know, there was no way for me to lead this in. It wasn't on the intake form. There's nothing like that. But she started digging. About 10 questions in, she got to the same one. And it happened more in the therapist's office. It was right next to weeping. It wasn't quite weeping, yeah. but it was close.
Oh, yeah.
And what it ended up being, or what, you know, a big component of this that I'm working through, is like sort of feeling it in my head, whether it was true or whether it's not actually the case. Like, in my mind, I sort of see myself, or I envision my family kind of looking at me like, you have to be sort of the golden boy of the, you know, I have three brothers, and, you know, the stories of all of them are unique, but especially the one directly older than me and directly younger than me. It's sort of like, you have to not be the burden, and you have to kind of be the kid that's not going to get in trouble or have issues or any of this kind of stuff, because really we need to spend our time and attention focused on these other kids. And like, they never once said that to me, and I almost feel like they never made me feel that way. But the unconscious, you have really no power over what you've, you know, no, you have, I have as much power over telling my unconscious what is true and what's not true as I do if I walked out to get my mail and somebody hit me by a car. Like I have no way to, so kind of what they've been getting at with this is that I would rather be in pain with my back or my neck or my lat's not working or whatever the case is than to grab that thorn of feeling like I need to be perfect all the time and actually pulling it out of my arm. A lot of the stuff that you talk about, especially recently, like, so there's a couple of things, I guess I want to get some clarification on. You have a saying, unfuckable with.
Unfuckwithable, yeah.
unfuckwithable, yeah. Which I think is even better. So like, what does that mean?
Well, I don't know. That was sort of born a couple months ago. And to me, I think the very bottom line with it is, you know, I can't be fucked with. Like, I'm unshakable. I feel resilient. I know who I am. I'm not apologizing for it. And I actually wrote a blog post on that topic a few weeks ago. And it's like the 5 steps to becoming unfuckwithable. And it's, you know, the first one is to find your physical strength, you know, because I feel like something really amazing happens when women pick up a barbell and they go, you know, oh, weird. I didn't know I could do that. Yeah. You know, I wonder what else I can do. And it's this amazing transformation that takes place. And then the second one is kind of finding your internal strength. And I think I have to revisit them. my pose. But yeah, just kind of like realizing who you are and spending some time with that, because I feel like we get so sucked into all the shoulds. Yep. In every area, you should eat this way, you should look like that, you should go to college, you should get this job, you should do whatever. And, you know, we don't all really do our best following these shoulds. You know, I think there are definitely some people who really like love to live up to these expectations and they really truly love it, but it's not for everybody. Yeah. So figuring out what's for you is very important. And then stop apologizing for all this stuff, because I feel like especially women just apologize all damn day. Yep. For something, whether it's walking into somebody in the supermarket or, you know, or apologizing for having ambition or like, you know, knowing who they are or speaking up and all that kind of stuff. And then really just trusting your gut, I think, is like the bottom line, and something that I really try my best to kind of get women to do, because I think that is such an amazing thing that happens when you really have faith in yourself. You know that you can take the leap because you know you're going to make it. No matter what happens, you're going to be fine. So just like have some faith and like do the thing, like take a risk and just trust yourself. So I think I missed one in there, but that's the bottom line. And that's like, you know, if I had to sum up what my entire blog was about, I would say is about that, those things. Yeah. So
the sorry thing is interesting. It's the first. So there's several women I know that there's a couple in particular where if I walk by them and you talk about like bumping into them, it's not even that. Even if they come to me to ask me a question, there's this apology thing. And I always thought why would you say that? Cause like, it's not, you know, there's nothing negative happening to me by the fact you're asking me this, but you're the first person I've ever seen that's put that into print. Which I find pretty interesting. Is this like maybe a habit that you had in the past, like I guess like the evolution of you as a person over the last 10 years?
Yeah. And I, you know, I would definitely say that I didn't necessarily like make that concept up. Like I've read about that a couple years ago and it shook me and I was like, wait, yeah, no, you're right. We do say that all the time. And I say that all the time. Yeah. And what are we doing? And, you know, I'm still not perfect. Like I still, it's kind of, because it's just like, it's habit. It's just like a reflex at this point. So it can take some undoing, but it absolutely, you see it all the time. Yeah. And you see it with the little things, with just, raising a hand in a meeting and be like, sorry. Or like, you know, and if you look at how men handle these interactions, like they don't do that at all. So why are we like apologizing and so, excuse me, I'm sorry to be alive, but can I, you know, use my voice? And so it's, I find that frustrating and heartbreaking. And I just wish that we could stop fucking saying sorry. I will also say that there is a time and a place for a very genuine, heartfelt apology that is due and you need to say it. But the stuff that is all the time, all day, like it's just, it needs to go.
The part about the shoulds, I think, is very interesting too. So like, you know, we should go to school the moment that, like, go to college the moment we graduate high school, and we should go to a 4-year university, and we should go and get a, you know, a salary job that pays no less than $60,000 per year, and we should buy a house by this, and we should have a kid by this time. But I feel like as the evolution of society over the last 20 years is very different now, right? Like, people will go and travel the world. They'll stop in the middle of college and they'll go and they'll travel the world for 3 or 4 years. They'll take a break from corporate America and go and do something else. I was reading about your story where you dropped everything and you moved across the country. You knew nobody. And there were some friends that you had, I guess, that maybe talked about doing it with you, but they were from other countries. They didn't have visas and that kind of thing. And I think it's so cool. Like, I talked to Lilia Christine a few weeks ago, and one thing that she brought up was that a lot of people live just life sort of out of fear. Like, they won't do anything. They become paralyzed by this. But I've kind of done the journaling thing, and I've done a couple of modalities, you know, programs around this stuff where I've done like a 30-day journal-esque thing, but it was very repetitive and I wasn't getting a lot out of it. Just since I started doing the journal speak stuff, like, I'm starting to get different sensations in my body now where it's like, it's tough to describe, but it's like there's been so much tension that's been built up, particularly like up and down my spine and kind of in my upper trapezius for so many months, close to a year actually. But as I've been working on your journal speak, it's been sort of a different sensation where it's almost like the muscles are letting go, and it's more of a, I just had a really tough workout because I've had contracted muscles for a year, right? More than a year. And so that's kind of what I think is going on. So I guess, like, give me an example of where, you know, you talk about a lot of this stuff sort of bubbling up. You refer to it as the steam valve. Like, basically, when you have physical pain or migraine, like, I've got a lot of friends that have migraines, and I, you know, I, so for the, for every bit of me, I want to say, look into this stuff instead of getting, you know, sinus surgery, or instead of just sort of sitting there and taking pill after pill, because I've been there. But it could be stomach issues. It could be skin problems. It could be a variety of different things. Larry David, he had a pain in his arm. And Howard Stern, they told him his rotator cuff was, he was just born with an abnormality. But that physical pain is literally like, think about yourself as you have a 20-ounce glass of water. And let's say the water is essentially your, it's your body or your being. And as your, you know, those emotions sort of, they move up, move up, move up. And then if they're, as soon as they're about to spill over, like, that's the physical pain. And what the adrenal speak is that you're essentially removing some of the water out or popping open the steam valve before it overflows. Do I have that right?
Yeah, I would say that would be pretty correct. I mean, essentially, journals, so it's hard for me to explain this without just getting super passionate about it. Because I believe that journal speak is like the answer to so many problems, mental and physical. Essentially, we live in a polite society, okay? So we are not supposed to think ill of people. We are not to speak ill of people. We are not to, there are certain feelings that every human being has as just the very result of being human that that are not considered acceptable. And most of us are taught from whatever doctrine we're raised with, even if it's just being, you know, in society, to be societally appropriate, that we need to kind of keep it under wraps. And I think this is so prevalent that most people don't even know it's happening. You know, like when you have a situation, so I'll give you an example of journal speak. And I'm just like really pulling this out of the air. But I have a client whose husband, after many years of work, being working outside of the house, is retiring. And they have a lot of plans. They've been married 40 years. And they have a lot of plans together to travel and to do all these wonderful things with their grandchildren. And isn't that wonderful, right? Isn't that something that we've been looking forward to, that we save our, they have money saved. It's all good. So as this was starting to approach, my client started experiencing horrible physical problems, shoulder problems and back problems and IBS and skin problems and constipation. And she was like, what's going on? So we ended up, working together at that time. And she was telling me all about this situation where her husband was going to come back into, you know, the fold. But then I got little hints here and there. She was like, yeah, well, you know, he never did anything around here, so I don't know what's going to happen now, and little things like that. And I was like, So just for the purposes of, you know, this podcast, I'll just kind of skip all the way to her journal speak. But essentially, it went from my husband's retiring and isn't this wonderful, and, you know, it'll be mixed bag, but we'll see, and we'll see how it goes, to, you know what? That no good SOB has never helped me around the house. I raised these kids by myself. I never got any credit for the part I played in his job. Everyone's throwing a parade for him. Where's the parade for me? And, like, you know, and it gets dark, things I wouldn't necessarily say out loud here, but, you know, lots of feelings in whatever kind of way they need to come out, but honest and raw. And she started, and an important thing people need to know about journal speak is journal speak is only for you. She never said these things to her husband, and all her symptoms are gone.
Yep.
It's not about mending a relationship. Her relationship with her husband didn't even need mending, really. It was about her holding down these feelings, and then all of a sudden, there was a reason for them to rise. And when they started to rise, her body reacted by giving her a lot of physical symptoms because, and this is so important for people to realize, her brain perceived the feelings as a greater threat than the physical problems, right? Our brain is just seeking to keep us alive. It's doing its very best. And if the perception of the brain is that these feelings feel scarier and more of a danger to our existence than dealing with doctor's appointments and medications and surgery and canceling your plans, the brain's going to go with the doctors and the canceling plans. And as soon as she did her journal speak, allowed her feelings to rise safely, destroyed it. One of the things I talk about in journal speak practices, you're finished with a journaling session. You don't need to read it again. You've already given your brain the message. Throw it out. Delete. If you want to take it to your therapist, make sure you keep it safe. Journal speak will not be understood by someone who can't speak the language. She's symptom free now. Having a fantastic life with her husband.
So literally, like, if you're doing this practice, on a journal, like, write it out and then burn it is what you're saying, or you type it on a computer and then as soon as you're done, you literally, you're saying delete as in delete the document. No reason to keep it.
I am saying delete the document. I'm saying that the reason this is journal speak and not journaling is that this is not some beautiful leather-bound keepsake that is going to mean something to you. This is a vehicle. So, you know, I use the word journal because I want it to involve people understanding that the best way to do this is to write it out at the beginning. But once people understand a journal speak practice, journal speak becomes a way of thinking, a way of life, a way of talking to yourself, a way of talking to your therapist, a way of understanding that when we let these inner feelings rise without shame, when we understand the trauma that we've been through and are able to look at it without apology because no one else is listening but us, our mind-body systems are no longer in this heightened fight-or-flight panic. And when our systems go down to equilibrium, there is no more need for the pain. The pain is there to distract us from the feelings.
And the people are getting better. They've healed from cancer with my book and MS and just about anything they can think of. You know, it's once you realize the body is just the health is just a report card of your relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I love that you put in your book, that it was the first place I had, your book was like the fifth on the topic that I had read. Sorry. It was like the fifth on the top, but it's also the longest. So that's kind of why maybe I put it off a little bit longer, but, is that you talked about the value of diaphragmatic breathing in yours. Amazing. Because it's something that, like, I do Olympic style weightlifting and I do a little bit of powerlifting and the whole, like, and a lot of people that I'll train around, I will say that I don't wear a weightlifting belt, but I just really, really focus on my breathing and I can crush weights, right? That I wasn't able to do using a belt because the breathing was much more inefficient. And I tell them, like, the best thing probably you can do as a lifter is better diaphragmatic breathing. And you have like a whole page on it in the book, which I think is awesome.
Well, yeah, because breathing is an expression, and the type T TMSer, they usually are breath holders.
Yep.
You know, because they're in that freeze state. Remember, this all happens from the fight, flight, response, survival mechanism. And this personality type that we're talking about, the type T tension producer, or tension magnets, really, they freeze. They neither flee or fight the situation. They're just locked in gridlock. And so that they begin to chest breathe a lot, which the brain associates chest breathing with anxiety because it's part of the fight flight response.
Yeah.
The brain associates belly breathing with the parasympathetic side of relaxation. And so when we are breathing, once again, though, it's just an effect. What causes the shallow breathing? The cause is the thought process.
Yep.
You know, the fear and the anger and the breathing and all this stuff, it's all an effect. It all begins with thinking, you know, and so that's the thing to get to is how we're thinking. And we're also repressing feelings, of course, at the same time, which is a whole another topic we could talk about for months on end. This is a very comprehensive topic, is why the book's so long.
Yeah. I would sit there sometimes at the beach and I would read 60 pages. So like it's very digestible as well. You know, it may look like long and intimidating, but I'll tell you what, the nice thing about reading it on a Kindle, you can't even tell how long it is, right? Like it's as thin as your iPad is.
You don't know enough to be afraid. Right?
You know, one thing like you talked earlier about people just need to be ready, you know, that's like, and then they can start healing. And I know that for a lot of people, like healing is not linear. Like for me, it was not linear. It was not like I wake up tomorrow and I was better than I was the day before. Sometimes I would have stretches where 7 or 8 consecutive days are better, but then something happens and it goes a little bit back. So for you, like, you know, you've been pretty well healed for a long time but I'm sure, like Sarno said, he's probably suffered more psychosomatic problems than any of his patients have. And I feel like, you know, do you put yourself in that as well? Like, I guess, what is maybe the most recent one or two things that have popped up that you've been like, you know, they've bothered, whether it's a bad knee or something, and then you're like, oh, I know what it is, and then it's gone.
I get asked that a lot. You know, I've had people when I consult with them, bend over and touch the floor. They're so cynical. They want to make sure that I'm healed before they even listen. Honey, I was in so much pain, I couldn't even touch my own kneecaps with my hands. That's how bad my pain was. But yeah, you know, I don't even think about it. That's the thing. They get me thinking about it, and then I don't even want to think about it. It's called body consciousness.
Maybe, you know? My elbow does hurt. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can actually work yourself into it because it manifests. What we focus on manifests.
Yep.
You know, that's the level that we're working at right now, you know. We things that don't even really exist to begin to create them, and then the doctors amplify it because they add that archetypal power of their authority onto it and they make it worse. But I remember a couple of years back when I was releasing 4 books at one time, that my two children's books and the Dr. Sarno book and the back pain book, that my right shoulder, I was working like 7 days, 14, 15 hours a day, just trying to hit all these deadlines. And I remember my shoulder began to lock up on me. It started to hurt, and I couldn't raise my hand above my shoulder level, and I knew exactly what it was. You know, I was pushing hard. And so I thought, that's it. I pushed everything aside for weeks. I just stopped it. I started to get out and more active again. It just disappeared. So we can work ourselves into anything.
Yep.
My pain's been gone for 18 years, and I've never felt better, even though I'm older. I felt worse when I was younger, so it has nothing to do with aging at all. You know, I've helped people heal in their 80s from severe pain. They're crippled. And so the body just is just listening to what we're telling it. And so, you know, I'll get things once in a while. You know, if I really push it hard, I've got something stressful, I'll get a little bit of heartburn or something. I used to have it every day. I used to eat these big things of Tums every day like crazy. But I know what it is. And so what happens is the fear's not there. The fear's the cause of all this. And it just calms down. Remember, it's starting in the amygdala brain.
Yep.
All of this process, it's the size of a walnut. Although I just had a scientist tell me it's not amygdala, it's amygdalae, he told me.
Yeah.
Because there's 2 of them. I didn't know that. But it's the center that's always scanning for safety. Am I safe? Am I safe?
Yep.
Am I safe? And when in this type of personality we're talking about, never feels safe. Not just physiologically, but psychologically, it doesn't feel safe either. It's never good enough. Has to be better. Has to be good and gooder, like I say. So good that it has to be perfect on the outside. So it's always in survival mode. And so this amygdala is always firing to the hypothalamus to create these overreactions in the autonomic nervous system,
yep,
to disrupt it. That causes all of the pain and disease. It all begins with the thought process that I'm not safe. That I'm not safe. And so physiologically speaking, with TMS, if we want to bring it back down to just TMS, it's about healing's about teaching you that you're safe. That's all it's about. That's all it is. You know, and then when it does, this brain begins to relax.
Yep.
And it begins to drop into parasympathetic mode. The breathing re-regulates like we were talking about. And it heals, all the cell structure heals. But it's fun to see these great minds out there talking, like Lipton and Greg Braden and all these people. They're saying the same things that I've been seeing within TMS. They're saying it out there in their field with cell biology and things like that. And so everyone's going to come to this conclusion eventually, you know, that mind is the power creating the body. And when the body's going bad, something's going wrong. Something's going wrong in mind. And, you know, how to get there, that's another story. You know, many different paths to the same destination.
I think it was either a chiropractor told me this. Which is why I'm bringing up chiropractors. But they had told you that your back pain was due to weak stomach muscles or weak abs or something like that. And you were going, I bench pressed 225. How is it possible? And I remember when I was told that, and I was squatting 300 and I was deadlifting 350 or 370 or something. And I was like, look, I get that maybe we don't all have strong abs and stuff like that, but how in the holy hell is that causing my back pain when I'm doing all these other things? And like Joe Schmo's walking down the street without back pain and he never does anything.
I talk about that when I lecture too. That's just a big thing. You know, this is why they don't know what they're doing and they're making it worse. You know, at that time, you know, I mean, I was benching 320 and I was squatting like 410 at one point. They were telling me my core was weak.
Yeah.
And my friend's over there eating donuts and smoking cigarettes with a big fat belly. He has no pain at all. You know? But I believed them. And so I was doing sit-ups every day, which is what your brain hopes that you'll do. But, you know, I want to say this too. Some of my strongest allies are chiropractors.
Okay.
You know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater in any specialty field. A lot of these people are coming to this realization. And they've healed with my book and they're doing great and they no longer manipulate people in the office. They hand them either my book or Dr. Sarno's book when they come in and they ask them what's going on in their life.
Yeah.
And then there's the one chiropractor that's become a friend of mine now. He had stage 4 cancer and he's healed completely. He was 25 years old. They told him, you know, you got to go home and die. There's nothing we can do. And he's fine.
That's amazing.
He's fine. Once he realized he did it to himself, he gave it to himself in this incessant desire to please everybody around us, to try to make everybody happy and just drain us of our life potential, you know, and pretending that we're something other than what we really, really are. This is what I get to when I do consultations with people, is this notion of the divided mind, right? Dr. Sarno's fourth book is called The Divided Mind. It's the primary reason is because it's divided between the conscious and the unconscious, mm-hmm. that there are two different personalities at play with each other at all times. In psychological conflict, but also it's divided between how you're acting to people and how you really feel inside. In 1975, Leon Festinger called that cognitive dissonance, and it caught on because I remember it in my college textbooks, cognitive dissonance. You know, that's it. And I see that every day that I work with people. That's the problem. They're not living true to themselves. You know, in the back of my new book, I put that, The 5 Regrets of the Dying. I don't know if you've seen that book. It was a great book written by a hospice nurse.
Okay.
It was so perfectly fit with TMS in my work that I wanted to put it in my appendix. And she saw what these people were regretting in their lives as they were dying. And it was so much the same. She thought maybe living people should know this.
Yeah.
Right. While we're still alive. And the number one was, I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not what others expected of me.
Yeah.
Second one was, I wish I would have not worked so hard.
Yep.
Third one, I wish I had the courage to express my feelings, which is part of TMS too. I wish I had stayed in fourth one. I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. That was interesting to me. I would have never thought of that, but it's so true. We're friends with them for a reason, right? When we're younger or whatever, we loved them at some point and we should stay in touch with them. And the fifth one was, I wish I had let myself be happier, you know, and that's really, if you remember the last line in my book, The Great Pain Deception, 16-point bold font, happiness first.
Yep.
You know, because happiness is part of joy and love and the things that we're not sensing in our lives because we're moving too robotically through the world, trying to please other people. And so, you know, all this stuff, it gets very complicated, but healing, sometimes when I'm working with someone, they'll heal right there on Skype. Their back pain, they've tried for years and it's gone. that a couple recently, fibromyalgia people, they sign on and are all twisted and contorted. Their doctors told them they had an incurable disease that could only be managed for life. There's nothing you can do about it. But when I'm explaining what's going on to them and this healing light, really, you're shining light into the darkness. You're expanding consciousness here. When they're realizing, suddenly, there's nothing wrong with me, they heal right there, and it's gone. Now, this is rare. Now, this is not normal. You know, they're the exception. But that's how quickly it can work. You know why? Because they were ready.